there you're hearing sounds of Tahrir Square in Cairo here on The Takeaway, the 11th day of an uprising in Egypt, and they're calling it the Day of Departure. We turn now to Ashraf Khalil, Egyptian-American reporter for Foreign Policy and Times of London. He's actually on a balcony overlooking Tahrir Square. Good morning again, Ashraf.
Good morning.
Or I should say good afternoon there. We just spoke with a protester who says he thinks the crowds today will exceed the crowds from last Friday, that they will break records. Do you think that's possible?
I think it's very likely at this point. I mean, just eyeballing the crowd from above and having walked in the crowd a few hours ago, it is pretty much at the number that they achieved on Friday last, and there's thousands more still trying to get in. So yes, I think they're gonna break it.
And we were talking about the for the past 2 days, the kind of tense, very in some cases violent and fearful mood in the square. But watching the photos on TV now, it sounds like this crowd is entirely different. I'm seeing mothers pushing strollers with babies, young children holding balloons in one case.
Yeah, the atmosphere cannot be more different than it was 2 days ago, when I think the people in Tahrir were really surprised by the assault from the pro-Mubarak, the armed pro-Mubarak supporters. I think they were kind of out of position, and they probably let themselves relax a little bit. And it was a real struggle. Wednesday was a very frantic and traumatic day for the protesters. And yesterday was a little bit quieter, but you still had this sense of siege. Larger area, you know, journalists were being attacked all over the place. Pro-Mubarak people had kind of set up a perimeter around Tahrir and were choking off medical supplies and food supplies that could get to them. This morning, they had all melted away. People were able to enter. I mean, there was significant security. There is still significant security. There's a bottleneck to get in. But there, the mood, the jubilation, and the confidence that all of us witnessed in the previous week has returned in force. I think they feel like they have taken two of the regime's best shots, and they're still there. So, you can't blame them, that confidence.
Ashraf Khalil, Egyptian-American reporter for Foreign Policy and Times of London. We also have with us Shibli Tahami, Anwar Sadat Professor for Peace and Development at the University of Maryland. Shibli, I wonder if the protest has reached its peak. After this, if Mubarak still refuses to step down, will we see these crowds begin to thin out? Will we see the protests begin to weary?
Obviously, no one knows, but I doubt it. I think this is a mood of empowerment. If it was going to die down after Wednesday and Thursday with all the attacks, and you have this size crowd that... the Arab reports from the field, remember you were focused on Tahrir Square, but there are hundreds of thousands in Alexandria and tens of thousands elsewhere around Egypt, and already many of the reports are saying, quote, millions overall in Egypt. So it's hard to know. Obviously, the Egyptian TV has said, the national TV has said there are over a million people in Tahrir Square. So it's hard to know, how it's going to unfold. But I doubt very much that this is going to die down. And it's very interesting. You focus on this story. That's a big one, obviously. And there are already a lot of maneuvering taking place. In the crowd today is Amr Moussa, who is the Secretary General of the Arab League, who used to be the Foreign Minister of Egypt, who had been talked about as a possible successor to Mubarak. And
whose office now, actually overlooks the square.
I'm sorry?
Whose office actually overlooks the square.
Absolutely, yeah. The Arab League office. Yeah. And when you think about the maneuvering, he today declared that there should be a dialogue. Of course, he's positioning himself. He's popular in Egypt. He was, in fact, so popular at one point that it was said that Mubarak removed him as foreign minister because he was popular. In fact, there was a song about him, not about Mubarak, which was frustrating, I'm sure, to the president. But nonetheless, he's part of the establishment, and he's positioning himself to be closer to the regime in some way. So if you look at him and Al-Baradei, two coming from the same kind of foreign policy bureaucracy, Al-Baradei is positioning himself closer to the demonstrators. Amr Moussa appears to be positioning himself a little bit closer to the regime, but also favoring the demonstrators. And that's going to be interesting to see how that develops.
Shibli, you've mentioned this on the program before, that the patriotism that we're seeing here, and I'm wondering if it's borne out in the chants that you're hearing, it embraces a kind of Arab nationalism as well as an Egyptian nationalism. This reaches back beyond any sort of government that Egypt has known. Can one create out of that the institutions for government in an Egyptian way?
Oh, no question. I think the Egyptians have a very strong Egyptian nationalism, but they see themselves as leading the Arab world. So in the sense, they don't see the two are separate. You know, one of the things that I've been finding in my own polling, and I've written about that, this is not something that we've, you know, discovered suddenly because of the demonstrations. I've been highlighting the gap between publics and governments in Egypt for a long time. I wrote two pieces just in the past year. And one of them in a major journal, talking about how even the sense of identity has changed in the sense that now actually you have more people identifying themselves, saying that they want their government not only to do what's good for Egypt, but to do what's good for Arabs and Muslims.
You know,
and so that's really interesting to see.
Well, since, I mean, we're talking about what's good for Arabs and Muslims, Ashraf Khalil, I'm wondering, the other big story here in the U.S., in the New York Times, is that Washington now has a plan for the transition for Mubarak to resign immediately in a transition of power with perhaps Omar Suleiman leading the government during the interim time. I'm wondering if this has any kind of resonance there in the crowd, or it's ignored, or if, like Mohamed Alberde says, they say, stay out of our politics.
Yeah, I mean, you get kind of a mixed message from the crowd. I mean, in that there is a distrust of American intentions in general. I mean, they understand realpolitik as well as anybody. Yeah, Egyptians are very politically savvy, regardless of anything you read about literacy rates or education levels or anything like that. They get political maneuvering. And so, I mean, I think they would be happy if the U.S. kind of helped give Mubarak a shove off the stage, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to embrace America's intention. They are well aware that this has helped keep Mubarak in power. And the number of people that have shown me tear gas canisters that they made in the USA on them,
increasing love for the United States. So we'll have to leave it there. That's Ashraf Khalil, Egyptian-American reporter for Foreign Policy in the Times of London, on a balcony overlooking Tahrir Square, and Shibli Telhami of the University of Maryland.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.